Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Now Mark, let's start off by recapping recent comments by Bill Dudley, and the ones that are getting the most attention were the comments focused on the US equity markets, and Dudley essentially saying that the Fed is going to be aggressive. And they're going to be so aggressive that they are going to pressure the markets by tightening their monetary policy. They are, or at least he is, aware that this is going to lead to lower markets. And who knows what that means in the long run. But overall, it was just very interesting to hear a Fed president come out and address the markets and potential downward moves in the markets that directly. What was your takeaway from what Dudley had to say this week?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Dudley's comments seem to say that the Federal Reserve would go out of its way to weaken the stock market to help lower inflation. And I think that that's a bit sensationalist. I mean, Powell's tried to address this in press conferences after FOMC meetings because people thought that there was this Greenspan put, the idea that if the stock market falls too sharply, the Federal Reserve will step in and easing policy to support the stock market, leaving aside the zero hedge type ideas where the central bank or the Federal Reserve buys equities directly. That doesn't happen. But I think that Dudley really misconstrues. It's hard, who am I to say that the former New York Fed president misconstrues what the Federal Reserve is trying to do? But I think he wrote it in a way for his audience, which is Bloomberg people, you know, people who are subscribed to Bloomberg. And I think that what the Federal Reserve wants to do is tighten financial conditions in order to bring inflation down. So how do they tighten financial conditions? How do we measure financial conditions? Well, generally, I'd say economists and strategists like myself look at three variables: stock market, interest rates, and the dollar. So to me, what Dudley is really saying is that the Federal Reserve has to tighten financial conditions further. And as they tighten financial conditions, we've seen what's happened in the past few days. I mean, think about what happened to the U.S. 10-year bond yield this week alone has gone up about 30 basis points. That's tightening financial conditions. The dollar has gotten stronger. We've got the dollar index popped above 100 today for the first time since, you know, the pandemic first struck. So we've got tightening financial conditions there, and we do have a stock market that looks a bit heavy, right? I mean, and it's not so much today. It's been recovering actually on days. What I've been noticing is that it sells off and then comes back often later in the day. But this week, I mean, we're really like the Nasdaq is down 3%. Is the Fed trying to drive the stock market down? No. If it falls as a secondary impact from its policy, is it that concerned? I'd say not yet. I'd say it takes. I mean, think about where we are. The Nasdaq is only down 3% for the year. I don't think the Fed's that worried about whether the stock market rises or falls from these levels. I think as Powell's tried to help us focus, he says, follow the financial conditions. That's what we're interested in. There's not a Greenspan put still in the stock market. We're interested in overall financial conditions. The Federal Reserve is trying to tighten policy, meaning to tighten financial conditions. So what happens in the stock market, I think, is partly a function of what Fed does, but it's also a function of why the Fed is doing what it's doing. The Fed is about to be engaged in one of the largest tightening sequences that we've seen in our generation. And so what does it want? So I think why it's tightening the policy is because it thinks the economy is strong enough to withstand it. And remember, what we've had, right, is we had a very strong Q4. Q1 looks a bit weaker, but we've got employment gains still very strong. Just yesterday, we had the weekly jobless claims fall to like new lows since the late 60s. Partly there's a seasonal adjustment revision that the Bureau of Labor Statistics did. But in general, we've got a fairly strong economy from the Fed's point of view. People like me who are worried about a recession coming, it's not so much this year. There's still a lot of juice left in the sort of, and of course, monetary policy impact with a lag. So we're looking, people like myself who are more pessimistic about the outlook, not about this year. It's really more about a 2023 story.
Well, that makes sense, Mark, because a lot of times if there is a yield curve inversion or if there is a doubling of the oil price or some of these other metrics that we're seeing, like a slowdown in GDP, it's really about a year off, sometimes, you know, 6 to 18 months off that we start seeing more of a recessionary situation play out. So there's still time before that. And as you noted, the general markets are still in a pretty good space. I mean, they're still at near their all-time highs. They've sold off a little bit in the first quarter, but they've had a really good run for a dozen years now. So I think the Fed has a little wiggle room. But when you talk about tightening the monetary situation, you mentioned that there's three main areas they deal with: the stock market, interest rates, and the dollar. What do you make of the dollar strength recently? Is that part of their is that part of what they're looking at that may tighten conditions? Is a strengthening greenback?
Yeah, so I think what it means is the stronger dollar acts, generally speaking, you want, from a central bank's point of view, you want the currency to be moving in the same direction as monetary policy. And so if the Fed was raising interest rates and the dollar would be falling, then you'd say, well, the weaker dollar offsets some of that tightening. So I think that would partly, like, give you a hard, concrete case what this means. In the last week or so, we've seen a Japanese Ministry of Finance expressed some concern about the yen. We've seen the Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda himself talk about rapid moves. We've seen a couple of large industry associations in Japan express some concern about a weaker yen. Typically, the weakness of the yen brings out these latent American protectionists, but not this time. I don't think we're going to see a complaint from the U.S. about the strength of the dollar. They know that they're driving it. And that's why one of the currencies I think is very vulnerable here is the Chinese currency. As recently as, say, early March, China offered 100 basis points more than we did to borrow 10-year money. Today, that yield premium is less than 5 basis points. Last month, at least according to the Bloomberg estimates, it looks like last month saw a record amount of foreign liquidation of Chinese bonds. In this environment, think what's happening. Shanghai is in an extended lockdown. This one of the largest, most important cities, not just population-wise, 25 million or so, but also for the economy. And so what we're going to see is a dramatic slowdown in the Chinese economy. We'll begin seeing that next week. Not only do we have portfolio outflows, this gap between U.S. and Chinese bonds narrowing, but next week we're likely to learn that the Chinese trade surplus has been horribly disrupted by these lockdowns. And so the trade surplus could go from, say, $90 billion in February to, say, $20, $25 billion in March. So the legs of the Chinese currency are being cut at the same time that the U.S. wants to see U.S. Federal Reserve wants to see a stronger dollar. And so this, I think, gives us that opportunity for the Chinese to let the RMB weaken a bit more. I sort of see it going up towards 640, 645 after having tested, like, 630. At the end of March.
That's interesting, Mark, especially the balance now of what China is going through. Again, this is self-inflicted, though, right? It is their government shutting them down, and the U.S. government has now, for the most part, it seems like, moved past COVID or is telling everybody they need to live with it. Let's talk about where yields are currently, though, because even though we saw the inversion of the yield curve this week, fact of the matter is yields are right around 2.6%. It wasn't long ago where almost yields across the board were well under 1%. I understand the Fed wants higher rates. The market is already pricing in higher rates, but just how high can these rates go in your eyes without having a devastating effect?
Yeah, isn't that amazing about the yield curve? I think it's like steepening about 26 basis points this week at the 2 to 10 year. That's the biggest steepening in the U.S. since June of 2013. So what's going on? I mean, I think that how to explain the steepening of the curve, I think it has to do with the Fed's announcement, the anticipation, and then the Fed's announcement about how much it's going to allow the balance sheet to shrink. You know, in the 2017-2019 period, the Federal Reserve capped the shrinking to $50 billion a month. This time, they're going to cap it at $95 billion a month, twice as much. And what they're going to do is instead of, like, it took many months to ramp it up to get to that maximum level. This time, they're going to be able to ramp it up much quicker. So I think that that helped influence the yield curve development. But I think that you ask an important question, which is really, it's not just that the Fed's going to be raising interest rates. I think everybody in the system knows that. But the issue is, how high can they go? What's the terminal rate? And right now, the swaps market is pricing in the Fed funds terminal rate around 3%. What's interesting about that 3% level is, one, it is above the, where the Fed thinks is neutral, so they're going to actually go from just removing accommodation to tightening. And secondly, the leading hawk at the Federal Reserve right now is the St. Louis Fed president, Bullard. And just yesterday, in an interview, he said that he wanted to see the Fed funds target 3 to 3.25% by the end of this year. Don't think he's going to get his wish. That tells you where he, at least the hawk, wants to take it. The issue really is, I don't think he really represents where the consensus is, but we have 7 meetings left for this year, and the market is pricing in, out of those 7 meetings, the market is pricing in at least 3 50 basis point moves. I think what we should anticipate is that the Federal Reserve is in a campaign where it doesn't really matter the high frequency data so much. But they are on like a predetermined course that the course that they're committed to that'll bring the Fed funds rate to the neutral setting. And the neutral setting is what, if you look at like their dot plot and you can Google like something like summary of economic projections, Federal Reserve, and the median dot plot for where the neutral rate is about 2 3/8. Nearly, I want to say that most of Fed officials see it between 2.25 and 2.5, with that 2 3/8 the median. And so I think this is it. What this is, the Fed's going to be raising rates towards that level before the end of the year. So they're not going to get to that 3%. And that's really what the Fed funds futures are telling us right now, that at the end of the year, the Fed is going to be around 2.5%.
Well, Mark, even if they get it to around 2.5% or even 3%, in reality, real rates are still going to be negative because inflation may be coming down with the year-over-year metrics as we look at, you know, the middle of 2021 to the middle of 2022 once we get in summer, but it probably will still be around 4, 5, maybe 6%. So in that standpoint, it will help, but I'm not sure that it's actually going to normalize rates, but that's what they're saying is normalizing rates. Just one other area though, besides interest rates, besides the dollar, besides the stock market, that I think is worth touching on, and that is the unemployment figures. You had mentioned something I had never heard about before this call called the SAHMS rule, the S-A-H-M SAHMS rule. And I was looking it up on Wikipedia as we were doing this. And it is an interesting metric that using the Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment rates. And you had mentioned that Fed policy may be more focused on the unemployment situation than even the interest rate. So I'd love you to touch on that and how that may be a guiding post for them as they look for recessionary pressures.
Yeah, I mean, I think that from the Federal Reserve's point of view, I think that the labor market is very strong. I think Powell said it's maybe too strong, which sort of hurts my ears hearing that. But I think that what's happening is, put this in perspective for you, the Fed's median dot plot had the unemployment rate this year and next year being at 3.6%. With April 1st jobs data that covered the month of, you know, the month of March, that's where we were. We're already at 3.6%. Which the Federal Reserve says is beyond like full employment. And so so for me, the interesting thing is that while some people talk about the yield curve as the source of where the recessionary trigger is going to come from, I thought that Dudley's piece talking about the unemployment rate focuses us away from the yield curve, away from the price of money, which and the yield curve, I mean, we see how the yield curve is being influenced by what the Federal Reserve does. It's not a clean read on market forces necessarily. And so that, one of the things that appealed to me about Dudley's argument and reminding us about SAHMS rule is that let's us focus on a broader range of indicators. So for me, it's not just about monetary policy tightening. It's about fiscal policy tightening. It's about the doubling of the price of oil, like you mentioned. It's about the consumers losing purchasing power. Our cost of living, real terms, is going up. On the other hand, when we think about what real interest rates are, how do we really think about it? I think because monetary policy takes place with a lag, I think that it's probably not the best methodology just to subtract current inflation from current rates. Because what really determines this, I think, is inflation expectations. And there's more robust measures of inflation expectations than the current measure. And this is why another reason why Bullard, who might not represent the majority at the Fed, his views are, I would take them seriously, because he's looking at another one of these rules besides Sahm's rule. Another rule that we use, that's commonly talked about in the markets, is the Tobin rule. And the Tobin rule really involves where Fed's funds should be based on where inflation, how much inflation is deviating from its target and how much growth is deviating from its long-term trend. And based on that, I think it's how the market and people like Bullard, who has his own version of the Tobin rule, why they're looking at Fed funds to go towards 3 to 4% based on a Tobin rule, which is, again, using this real interest rate. Look, play around with it. You know, you can use your own estimates, and you can there's a place on the internet where you could plug in your own estimates as well as your own data to try to assess where the Tobin rule, where sort of. And this, the important point too about this, and I think this is part of your criticism, Chad, is that the Fed is not operating for much of a rule anymore. It's more on a ad hocery. They adopt an average inflation target, and then as you know, inflation gets above it, they slow to respond to it. And so what oftentimes it seems to be the pendulum swings between ad hocery, sort of at your whim based on like the high frequency data, versus some rule-based decision-making principle. And that's what the Tobin rule allows for, is sort of a hard and fast like rule. On the other hand, Taylor himself suggests that it's not the best operating with it when you have a specific shock, like a war, like a housing market bubble. The Taylor rule might prevent as quick of a reaction as might be necessary. But so to me, the idea of the unemployment rate being trying to like use the unemployment rate to try to assess where the economy is going, there are ways to get around money, the price of money, and to push us towards some rule-based decision-making principles.
All right. So, Mark, we've touched on a lot of different aspects here of what the Fed is watching or could be focused on, what investors are focused on, and quite frankly, the data that we keep on seeing that the media is focused on. Coming up next week, we're getting a lot more data. What's going to be important to follow along here? Make sense of everything that's coming up for us.
Sure. Well, okay. Maybe a couple of the highlights. One would be we've got the ECB meeting. And the ECB has at its last meeting, indicated that it would be buying bonds still through June. Some people want to have the ECB give us a hard end date. When will they stop buying bonds? Right now, they said Q3 bonds purchases will be data dependent. The market needs something more specific to believe that the ECB will raise rates later this year. The market is still pricing in about 50 basis point hikes from the ECB this year, all like backloaded towards the end of the year. But we really need to see them, as for the sequence of events, we need to see them stop buying bonds at no later than June. Secondly, I'd say that going to be very interesting data from China. As I mentioned before, the Chinese economy is weakening. They've locked down a major city, and this follows other lockdowns. And my bet would be that they cannot stop COVID by keeping people in their houses. There's too many ways it spreads. I just don't think it works. And so we're going to see, I think, next week, is we're going to see three big reports from China. One is the CPI likely to tick up. Get a load of this. It's going to be maybe above 1% for the first time in a few months. Producer prices are likely to have fallen. Again, you know, about 6 months ago, people were saying that Chinese producer prices were really driving U.S. CPI. Chinese producer prices, if they fall like they expected to, it would be the fourth or fifth month in a row that they're going to fall. So that relationship seems to be decoupled. And the third thing is a trade balance, which, as I noted before, rising import prices and weaker exports, but general disruption of trade, is likely to see the Chinese trade surplus fall sharply. Here in the U.S., we get several reports. We get our CPI and our PPI. both of them likely accelerated again. And we're going to get retail sales and industrial production for March. This will help economists firm up their Q1 growth numbers. But I'm not sure it's going to have much impact on Fed policy, which the market is very confident there's going to be a 50 basis point hike. Next week also sees three central bank meetings. We've got, besides the ECB, we've got the Bank of Canada. You know, it's amazing what the market's pricing in for the Bank of Canada next week. They're saying that if you look at the overnight swap market, the market's pricing in about 65 basis points of Bank of Canada tightening. And like, what does that mean, 65 basis points? I think it means something like this. The market feels confident of 50 basis point hike and is roughly divided between whether it'll be 50 or 75 basis points. This seems to me to be a bit over the top. I think I don't think anything more than 50 should be expected, but the Bank of Canada may also say something about its balance sheet reduction, which could begin as early as this month, but maybe not until May. The other central bank that meets next week is the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. And that's interesting in its own right, partly because, you know, when we talk about this 2% inflation target, this is where we get it from. New Zealand was the first to adopt it. New Zealand's economy has been growing, and the pressure, they've raised rates at the last three meetings by 25 basis points. And the market now has about a 65% chance that they go 50 as well next week. So just to quickly recap, we get some Chinese data that's going to show the impact of the locking down of GDP important sectors of the economy. We get the ECB. We're going to be watching what they do with the bond buying. We get the Bank of Canada, 50 basis points fully priced in, maybe a bit more, which means that the Canadian dollar might not rally on the news itself. We get the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, 25 is most likely, but the market's two-thirds of the way to pricing in 50. And lastly, we get a bunch of U.S. economic data, likely to see accelerated inflation, likely to see that the U.S. consumer is being squeezed by buying more, by buying higher-priced gasoline. We're likely to see the market still anticipate a 50 basis point hike by the Fed.
Interesting that we are now seeing more central banks go down that road, or it seems like the expectation being that they're going to be hiking by 50 basis points. We'll see how the markets handle it. We'll see how the economies handle it. And we'll see just how many of these rate hikes these central banks can get through. But we are now in that environment where central banks around the world broadly are tightening and starting to tighten a little more aggressive. Mark, thanks as always for your time, buddy. Great chatting with you this week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Good luck. Thanks to everybody.